Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Circles of Prosperity. My name is Gloria, and you're tuned in today to our book study, Critical Addiction, Breaking Free from Critical Addiction, by Kaylee Marino. I am waiting for our host, Cynthia, as well as Dr. Reggie, to join us today. If you have any questions, feel free to hit 1 on your telephone keypad, and we will address those. I know typically Dr. Reggie starts the morning broadcast off with a prayer, and I guess that would be, he's not on the line yet this morning, so I guess that would be my task to start that. So I'm just going to start by saying, Heavenly Father, thank you for overseeing our lives today. Thank you for another day, another opportunity to be in the world and not of it. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here now with Circles of Prosperity and all of our listeners as we move forward this day. And I'm just grateful to be here. So thank you, Father. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And we are going to get started today with our book. All right? Okay, so yesterday we started out with Chapter 1 of Breaking Free from Critical Addiction. In that chapter, we talked about what critical addiction really is. Part 1 of the book is called Identifying the Problem. And so we talked yesterday about what critical addiction is, and I just want to recap the definition there before we get started with the second half of the first chapter. And then before I get started, I also want to say, if you have any questions that come up for you, or you want some clarification on anything that I'm talking about in this book, because like I said yesterday, I'm actually not reading the entire word for word on this chapter. So if you haven't gone out and purchased the book and you have questions about something that I've said, you can either send me an email at gloria.wells@circlesofprosperity.com. Or you can visit our website at circlesofprosperity.org, and you can leave your comments there in the forum section of the website. So I just want to make sure that you know that you have options if you're not listening to this call live, where you can click in and actually ask a question. Then that is the way that you would actually go about getting your questions answered regarding this book study. All right, so like I said, I want to recap yesterday on the definition of what critical addiction is. So I'll go ahead and read that definition again just to get you familiar with Kaylee's definition of what that means. Okay, so she says critical addiction is a broad term for problems with habitual, negative, and critical thinking to the detriment of the addict's self-esteem, relationships, and or health, causing either low or aggrandized self-esteem, anxiety, anger, depression, paranoia, self-absorption, defeatism, pessimism, and or feelings of overwhelm, often leading to other forms of addiction of which critical addiction is the primary addiction. Addicts have a compelling attraction to negativity that expresses itself through anger, guilt, and fear, as well as fault-finding of self and others. Critical addiction is spread through social contacts, making it a social disease of immense proportions. So there we have the definition again there for critical addiction. Again, I'm reading that just to make you comfortable or to remind you of actually what her impression or thoughts are on critical addiction. Today we are finishing up chapter one, where she gets into more of the aspects of criticism, of the criticalness. So she talks about that being addictive and dangerous. Although criticism is not a substance, it is addictive as any drug, and I propose it poses a threat that is actually more insidious. Habitual criticism has all of the characteristics of a drug. Criticism is habit-forming, it's mood-altering, it's life-threatening, it distorts awareness, it leads to destructive behavior, and it affects mental and physical health. So there she's talking about and comparing critical addiction to other drugs of choice and their similarities there. So she goes on to say that it's truly a social disease that affects whole families, organizations, and societies. Like drug addiction, criticism affects everyone. It affects the person criticizing, the person being criticized, and the people around them. However, there are many aspects of criticism and negativity. All right, so now she's getting into the aspects of critical thinking. She actually lists six reasons. She says that they present more of an insidious danger than drugs for the six reasons that follow. So she lists these six reasons in the book, and I'm going to briefly go over what those reasons are. Okay, so the first one is that there's no product involved. Criticism's threat can be considered more insidious than drugs because there is no product involved, making it completely accessible to literally everyone all the time. It is available to rich and poor alike. Anyone can use it, including young children. In fact, it is an equal opportunity addiction available to every person, regardless of income, age, sex, nationality, education, sexual preference, or political party. So that is the first aspect there of criticism. There's no product involved, which makes it that much more, you know, easy for all of us to access. We're not having to go out and access something else before we become critical. We have direct access to criticism. So that's why it's so rampant. That's one of the reasons. And the second reason, she goes on to say, is that criticism is masked by social popularity. Okay, so I've condensed down what I'm going to read under these options here. So mass, she's talking about being masked by social popularity. She goes on here to say, we also value our critics. Professional critics are paid well for their critiques of politics, movies, books, restaurants, theater, art, etc. There is snob appeal in being a critic who looks down and degrades what he or she believes to be an inferior product, ideal, and people. Sadly enough, our society rewards critics with high salaries, special privileges, respect, and popularity. While there are those in the profession who fairly and respectfully evaluate strengths and weaknesses, they are often the exception instead of the rule. So there she's talking a little bit about how this criticism is actually masked in our society. It's actually something that we respect, that we pay high salaries for. So you can begin to see how criticism has pervaded our entire society in many ways and why it's so prevalent. Okay, so she goes on still along that line after talking about it being masked by social popularity. She goes on to say that society actually values criticism. There is an underlying false assumption that if people feel guilty enough or if they believe that what they are doing is wrong or bad, they will stop doing the unwanted behavior. In other words, most people falsely believe that guilt and shame motivate positive behaviors. Until this insane assumption is challenged and changed, there is no hope for addicts because the belief justifies frequent fault finding as the right thing to do. Do you ever do things you know you will later regret, like eat junk food, drink too much, stay out too late, or tell someone off? Of course you do. We all have done things that we believe are wrong or bad for us. We knew we would feel guilty if we did them, but we did them anyway. Our fear of feeling guilty didn't stop us. Knowing that certain habits are unhealthy and may even result in death does not stop some people from using them. Neither shame nor guilt motivates people to take positive action. Okay? Shame or guilt does not motivate people to take positive action. In fact, people who feel shame or guilt are more likely to have destructive behavior than those who feel good about themselves. Shame and guilt only magnify a person's low self-esteem and problems. Drug treatment programs only work long-term when they help people to like themselves. So there she's talking a little bit about shame and guilt and how that doesn't really work for us in terms of helping us to feel better. I'm actually in the process of still letting go of cigarettes. And for a long time, people around me would have, you know, tried to guilt me into or making me feel bad about that particular habit. And anyone who's gone through that knows that, you know, when you're in that place where you're feeling that shame and guilt about anything that you're doing, it doesn't help the situation. It actually makes it worse. So she says that shame and guilt only magnify a person's low self-esteem and problems. I definitely can vouch for that, you know. All right. So we're moving on then to the fourth, I believe that is. One, two, three, four. Yes, this is the fourth aspect of criticism. She says that it's mistaken for problem solving. Okay, so criticism poses a threat because it is mistaken for a productive process of problem solving. A problem exists when there is interference with desired results in a given situation. Therefore, problem solving is a supportive process for considering ways and means to get the results we want or to reach a goal. Problem solving evaluates available resources and skills and how they can be used more productively. It identifies but does not dwell on what is lacking in the situation or what can be done. The problem-solving process focuses on solutions. It concentrates on what can be used and what can be done. Unlike critics, problem solvers make suggestions that help people get the results they want without degrading them for the present condition. While it takes skill to solve problems, anyone can be a critic. Critics seek problems, not solutions. Critics point out limitations and flaws, often without even attempting to pinpoint the recipient's strengths or ways to use those assets to improve performance. Criticism can easily be done by anyone, even those who have no intention on doing anything to improve the situation. Okay, so how many of you have been in a situation where you needed somebody's help and the only thing they could really offer you was a line of criticism, either about what you shouldn't have done to get in that situation, or now that you're there, you know, there may be some I told you so's. This is also a form of criticism. People mistake being critical as actually helping you to solve a problem, when in fact, what we just talked about was shame and guilt only magnifies the problem. So being critical doesn't help anyone in a situation where they're actually reaching out for help. She's talking here about how criticism can be done by anyone, but not anybody can actually solve a problem, which means focusing on a solution and then bringing that solution into the light as a possible end to that means. So I think that's pretty big to really understand that being critical doesn't really serve, you know, you in a situation or anyone else in a situation. Okay, so she's talking here in this last section about how it's used for social control. There was a part of this particular section that I found really interesting that I'm going to share now, and we'll talk a little bit about this last section here in a moment. Okay. So in this last section, it's called Use for Social Control. So she's saying that people who are overly critical use that as a form of social control. The part that really fascinated me is here. Condemnation, a particular form of criticism that shames the other, can even be used to control those who are bigger than us or have authority over us. Therefore, small children learn to use condemnation in their defense and may continue to use it as adults whenever they feel controlled and helpless. This results in name-calling as a habitual way of protecting themselves. Children's fairy tales are filled with stories of people who are characterized as being either all good or all bad. Many, if not most of these stories, are highly polarized. Good people were always right and did the right thing, while bad people were always wrong and did the wrong thing. This gave us unrealistic standards and expectations of others and ourselves. Some children conclude that they cannot compete and will never be good enough because the standards are too high and the path is too difficult and painful. They believe they cannot afford to sacrifice what little they have, so they give up on being good and identify with the bad children in the stories. They are unhappy and grow up with negative self-image, seeing themselves as villains, victims, or both. Okay, so that goes back a little bit to what we were talking about yesterday. She talked yesterday about, in the book, in the part that we read yesterday, she talked about two reasons that cause us to have all of this critical thinking in our life. One of those was trauma, and the other was cultural or the people around us instilling or us picking up on their critical nature when they're dealing with certain issues. Now, here she talks about the fairy tales that children often read or that are often read they're filled with stories with people who are polarized, which means everybody's either good or everybody's really bad. And if they can't, and children have a very unique way of deciphering, you know, what something means. So if they can't be completely good, then they have a tendency to follow and go down a path where they're hanging with, let's see, what does she say about that? Therefore, children learn good people were always right and did the right thing, while bad people were wrong and did the wrong thing. This gives us unrealistic standards and expectations of others and ourselves. So this is just one aspect of how criticism is instilled in us early on. It also speaks, I think, to where unworthiness begins to be set up in us very early on. Unworthiness, I think, is a huge reason why we don't sometimes meet the goals that we set out for ourselves, because subconsciously we don't feel that sense, that real sense of worth, that we truly deserve what it is that we're seeking after. So this just points out that this is one of the ways that that's set up. Okay? She also goes on to say in this particular chapter that she's noticed a welcome trend in some of the TV and movie storylines today. These plots reveal the good qualities that lie within the villain, as well as the negative characteristics that plague the hero. Today's Superman makes mistakes and has a dark side with which he wrestles, while Lex Luthor, the villain, has a heart that was hurt. He frequently tries to do something kind, only to be thwarted in his attempt. This humanizing of people is a progressive change. I don't believe that anyone is all good or all bad. We are just human beings with human frailties that challenge us. So there she's going on to talk about how movies and TVs are really moving in a direction where they're attempting to humanize the good and the so-called good, the good guy in the movie, and the bad guy in the movie. So, and that helps us to move away from this polarized thinking that either someone is all the way good or completely bad. You know, I like the way she says at the end of that, that we're just human beings with human frailties that challenge us. So, you know, we're all challenged by things that life may bring our way, but I think that being in this book study will help us to, in this particular book, as with all the books that Cynthia has bought through on this show, we've learned so much about ourselves and about, you know, our belief system and how that plays into what we actually create in the world. And I really think that this book will help us to really begin to become more aware of how we are creating our future or our reality. So, yes, we know that belief systems do that, but if we don't really understand how to unravel some of the critical thinking, which, of course, is negativity, the symptoms is what we're going to get off into on Monday. She begins to really break down, you know, what the results, the symptoms of this critical addiction is. And that'll be really interesting, where she'll begin to, and you may begin to see some aspects of your own personality within those symptoms there. And again, this book study is not meant to necessarily overshadow in any way what your current circumstance is in terms of, I'm sorry, I was just getting a message here, so that threw me off a little bit. What was I saying? Okay, so this book study, I think, will help us to unravel some of that critical thinking, some of the symptoms that we'll get into next week, that, again, you may find yourself or some aspect of your personality there. And, again, this is not meant to make anybody feel bad. It's actually meant to bring awareness to that form of behavior, okay? So because I really think that once you become aware, it's like the old saying goes, when you know better, you can do better. All right, there's just one last section here to this particular, to the first chapter, and then I'm going to go ahead and bring Cynthia on. It looks like she's joined us here, so that I'm going to finish out this last little section, and then we'll bring her on. Criticism is more dangerous than drugs because critical thinking is the basis for all other addictions, including drugs. Alcohol does not cause alcoholism any more than drugs cause drug addiction. People who feel good typically do not want to consistently alter their awareness. Drugs interfere with their natural high on life. With the exception of newborns, of drug-addicted mothers, drugs and alcohol do not cause addiction. They merely keep it going once it has started. These and other addictions are secondary addictions which are precipitated by a primary addiction. Critical thinking is the underlying primary addiction. When the pain of criticism, self-inflicted or otherwise, guilt, worry, fear, and shame become too great, most people try to alter their mental state with drugs, sleep, food, shopping, physical activity, or redirected mental and emotional activity. The form of pain relief that they use most becomes an addiction, and this is their best coping strategy. It is the only way they know to temporarily block negativity from reemerging into their consciousness. The problem is, it doesn't work to stop the mind from being critical. It just causes more issues in their life, perpetuating the cycle. So there she's really talking again about critical thinking being the underlying primary addiction. So when she's talking about people overindulging in other things, whether it's drugs or alcohol or sleep, food, shopping, a bunch of other things that people go off into to avoid the pain of the negativity. But critical thinking underlies all that, all of those. It's the basis for every kind of addiction. It's somewhere within our psyche where either we have a lot of that criticism either pent up or is still having such a major impact on our life that we use those other things to avoid that. So, I can really appreciate her ability to combine her experience as a master. She has a master's in social work as well as being an ordained interfaith minister. Kaylee Marino is who I'm referring to there. So I can really appreciate the fact that she's giving us this mini, she's actually playing the role of a therapist here in this book for us. You know, she's giving us the points probably that have been built up over many years of her seeing all these other patients. She's giving us all of the wealth of information that she's acquired throughout the years of seeing patients in her practice, along with combining her spiritual experience. So I just really think that it'll be valuable for us to get this kind of perspective to help us break free, as she says, as the title of this book says, break free from that critical thinking, because we now know that's the basis of every other kind of addiction. All right, so I am going to go ahead and bring Cynthia on the line here. Good morning, Cynthia. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, how are you this morning?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, my wonderful. Wow, it's a great lesson this morning, huh?
Yes, we've gone over the aspects here of critical thinking, and you know, we were just wrapping up the first section of the book here. So, did you have any comment on anything that we've talked about in this section?
Well, I'm not quite clear. I just tapped in on the very last section, and I think tuned in on the very last section where you were talking about how it is masked sometimes. Criticism is masked sometimes as problem solving.
Yes.
How we tend to point out all of the problems, all of the errors, and call ourselves helping someone, but actually we're being critical at that point. So, and we're not really seeking to solve the problem, but just to bring light to everything that is wrong. And it reminded me of when I was a kid. I would go and clean the kitchen, and I'd wash the dishes, and you know, I thought I did a great job just washing the dishes. And then my mother would come in, and she said, "Well, you didn't wipe the refrigerator down, you didn't sweep the floor, you didn't mop the floor to clean the kitchen." You know, that's what cleaning the kitchen means. It's not just washing the dishes. And I would just feel so deflated. And she was really good about doing that all the time. No matter if she gave me a task, she never said I did a good. It was her way of teaching, I'm sure. But she would never say that's you did a great job. She would come in and tell me all of the things that I missed. And that sticks with you over the years. Because what happens is your inner child holds on to it, and that feeling of not being good enough, and then it plays out in later years in another way. So this journey in this book, as she's going through these different aspects of criticism, or what she calls critical thinking, I think the audience will benefit from thinking about these childhood experiences, because remember, the key point that Callie Marino has made is that these are attitudes, or these are belief systems that we were taught. And so these childhood experiences where we had all these emotions wrapped up when certain things were pointed out to us, when we were criticized, when we didn't quite hit the mark in a classroom, those emotions became feelings, and they reemerge with us when they're trigger points that happen in our relationships, and it causes relationships to fail, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But in our relationships with our loved ones, or you know, our husband, our wives, it just at work, things that happen to you as a child, these feelings reemerge. What we want to do through this process is really begin to uncover those things, at least, and have them reemerge for you now as you think about them, and you can say, "Oh my God, that's what I'm doing." But we're going to gently show you how to release yourself from the bondage of those. And what's really interesting is the way that we release them are the things that we talk about here on Circles of Prosperity. So where are you headed now in your journey?
Are you referring to the book here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to comment on what you just said about, and that was a big part of this book for me as well. It also caused me to think back on similar situations like that, where you know your parents were, and this journey is not, I don't think it's meant to like rehash all of the things that you've gone through throughout, you know, your childhood life or anything like that. But as you may start to experience the same thing that Cynthia was just speaking about. I had the same thing where I would think back on a similar event like what she just said and really realize that that was being critical. So you can begin to see how criticism is kind of lightly ingrained in us very early on. It's not really recognized as criticism. And we know that, just like in the story that she just told, you know, her mother and mine as well, they were trying to teach us. They were trying to teach us how to make sure the kitchen is absolutely clean, that it involves all these things. But the key element that was left out was really focusing on what we did do right. Okay, so if that light wasn't really allowed to shine on you on what you were actually doing right, then early on it may have been set up that, you know, I can't get anything right. So when you get out in life later on and you begin to try to create for yourself the kind of life you want, you know, these things come back up. They come back up in a very subconscious manner, and they could lead to either you sabotaging what it is that you're going after, or, you know, losing all, you know, interest in even pursuing that. So this is the type of thing that originates very early on, and this is the type of thing that we're attempting to unravel, or at least shine a light into that level of critical thinking to make you aware that, yes, this was a form of critical thinking. It was set up very early on. And whether you're a very critical person right now in your life or not, for me, I have a tendency to be very easygoing, and, you know, I'm always trying to encourage people to do, you know, what they feel is best for them. But I definitely see certain levels in myself that I've become aware of, you know, reading this material that I just wasn't aware of before. And that is the ultimate goal in this book, and bringing this book to the Circles of Prosperity table, is, you know, when I was reading through this material the first time, before it even became a book that would be presented in this type of format, about, first of all, I gobbled the book up. I read it in record time, and I just remember thinking, this is great information. If everybody knew that this is what critical addiction really is, you know, because you hear, you know, well, don't be so critical, and you hear off-the-cuff remarks about criticism throughout your life, but do we really understand what that means? And how to, better yet, how to correct that. So that's, you know, like I said, when I originally read this book, I thought, wow, if more of the world just could better understand this principle, it would just be awesome, not just for us as individuals, but for the people that we interact with in our life, whether it be a parent, a child, a coworker, a sibling. You know, it would change those relationships in a lot of ways, I think.
All right. So, you know, I'm concerned here that when we use the term, and I mentioned this yesterday, but I don't think I was very articulate about it, using the term critical thinking and criticism. Because, you know, they're actually teaching classes now on critical thinking, and that tends to be a process of looking at conditions or looking at a problem and figuring out a way to solve that problem. And my whole point is that term, I guess I'm having a conflict
with I get that, actually. Critical thinking, I think, when you think of critical thinking, she talked a little bit about that when in the area that we were just in on problem solving. So to think critically, when you're thinking critically, you mean in terms of coming up with a solution, not as viewing criticism as an actual problem. So the word criticism itself means being critical of someone else or something else, whereas critical thinking What I'm thinking about critical thinking, and I will look this up and bring some more information about this next week. I know tomorrow we're doing Oracle Friday, so Monday I will have some more information for you on the difference between critical thinking and actual criticism. Right off the top of my head, what I'm thinking there is critical thinking is this problem solving that we just talked about, how you're not. When it's all critical, the focus is on what the problem is and not what the solution is. She talks about anyone can be critical versus it takes a special kind of person to actually, or not a special kind of person, but it takes a different way of thinking to actually be more positive than you are critical when you're trying to solve a problem. So, again, I will find out I will have a much clearer description of the difference between the two, because thinking critically can be an asset to you. If you're trying to move through a problem, but when it comes down to being critical, that's a completely different thing, I think. But again, I will clarify that and have a much clearer. Easier to discern, understand comparison there for you on Monday, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. Well, listen, I think we can really kind of sum this up very quickly as we go, right before we go into our closing prayers this morning. And that is that there's no right or no wrong. That's number one. If we move into a consciousness of there's no right, there's no wrong. If we move into a consciousness of there is no judgment, then the things that we're talking about immediately dissolve. And so I don't want you guys to walk away feeling like, oh, my God, I got all of this going on with, in me and I can't solve it or, I'm feeling the pain of it. The principles to remember as we're going through this book study is there is no right or wrong and there is no judgment. And when we release that, we solve everything. So I'm going to ask Dr. Reggie to take us into our closing prayer.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this beautiful lesson and that we all learn no labels, no judgment. No matter what happens to us in life, even as children, we learn to take those lessons that evolve. The whole purpose is to evolve in this life, to love ourselves and forgive ourselves and see others differently as sacred creations of you. Because critical thinking changes into a more magical way of life and thinking. By practicing the presence of God always and seeing the light in everything that we do. And learning from experience, we can hold on to these judgments and things in the past, even from parents, when we learn to love in everything we do by the Holy Spirit. We believe it is so, and so it is.
And so it is.